Welcome to the Red Caps Podcast, a podcast where we dip our caps into the blood of our listeners and we ramble on about old school games. In today's episode, I'm going to talk about a stat generation method I think you might like, a convention visit recap, some gaming updates, and podcast updates. Remember, no mortal can outrun a Red Cap. So as always, I hope you can sit back, listen, and enjoy. All right, we'll do the stat generation method first. On Twitter, there was a conversation, as there always is, about how somebody should roll up their stats. The typical, should we do 3d6 down the line, or should we do 4d6 drop the lowest? Should we do array, point by, blah, blah, blah. All the different normal options were being discussed. I suggested the following, and people seemed to enjoy it, so I thought I would share it with you all. I'm calling it the rotation method. I'm sure it's got a better name or something from whoever created it, because I didn't create this, but I have no idea where I got it from, so I can't give proper credit. But the way it works is you would roll 3d6 down the line. So let's say you rolled 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So stat, intelligence, wisdom, dex, con, charisma. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And you wanted to create a magic user. Well, a 9 isn't maybe the most optimal. Maybe you want to move that 13 into your intelligence. You have to roll the whole numbers around. So you keep the order the same, but you can shift that 13 to your intelligence, which would then end up giving you a stat line that reads 12 strength, 13 int, 8 wisdom, 9 dex, 10 constitution, 11 charisma. Like you just rotated it around almost like a dial on a like a luggage combination lock type idea. Maybe the easiest way to think of this would be if you had all those numbers, the 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, written down on a small strip of paper vertically. You would hold it up next to your character sheet, slide it up and down until you got, let's say you got that 13 on your int, and that's where you want it to be. And then you would cut the piece of paper where there is no, stat name next to it, and slide it down below. As I'm saying all this out loud, I realize this might be an incredibly confusing way to describe what I'm saying. If you check the show notes, I'll have a link to like a visual example of it. But basically the idea is that it allows you to keep the integrity of your roll 3d6 straight down the line, but give a little bit of a ability to choose what you want at least one stat to be in, and it keeps all the rest of them in line in order. So it's some choice, but isn't quite as optimal maybe as somebody just wanting to swap two stats. This keeps the integrity of the order that you rolled them in. So just an idea, seemed to be popular whenever I posted on Twitter, thought maybe you guys would enjoy it as well. All right, what else happened this month? Well, back at the beginning of November, I went to a small local RPG convention. It's called Phantasm. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. And I got to play a couple games. I played Mutant Crawl Classics. We played a module called Museum at the End of Time. The link for that will be down in the show notes. It was a free adventure that was published for RPG A Day at some point, I believe. It was a funnel, and it was all kinds of goofy fun. I had the following characters. I had Darth the Human, Maple the Dog, which is named after my dog, Krug the Mutant, and Kate Moss, the Moss person. Of my four characters, only Kate Moss died. The rest all survived through the funnel, and I'm not sure if that really has that much to do with my skill, and maybe just more lucky rolls and the fact that enemies seemed to target the other characters at the table rather than myself, so it was great. All kinds of weird, kooky stuff happened. Lots of traps and some interesting rolls that saved my bacon a few times. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was also supposed to play DCC that same evening, but the DCC game got canceled, so I ended up playing some board games. Did some shopping, picked up this giant, massive D20 that glows in the dark. I will probably never use it as a rolling D20. I have used it as a card protector at poker the last couple of poker nights. But I bought it with the idea of using it as the item I set on the table to indicate room difficulty when I go to run index card RPG. So that looks pretty cool. Also at that convention, I got to sit down and have a conversation with Ed Greenwood. I didn't record it. It was just a casual conversation. He was doing a presentation at the convention. Ed Greenwood, if you were not familiar, is the creator of the Forgotten Realms. He was a really interesting guy to talk to, very open, very chill. He had a lot of opinions on what Wizards of the Coast is currently doing with D&D. But the one thing that I was interested in asking him about was that thought I've had in my head now for a while of why aren't there more massive world scale settings. I've brought it up a couple times on the podcast, and I've had a bunch of people call in and give me some feedback on that as well. But when I asked Ed about it, one of his answers, he had a few different comments, but one of his answers that kind of stuck with me was that it was incredibly difficult to get creative people to be on the same page and not try to protect their little corners of this world, essentially blaming it on ego, that ego can cause a massive hindrance on this. He's somebody I'd like to get on the podcast at some point, so I'm going to try to reach out to him here for the new year, because I don't think I'll have time before the new year to get him on. But if I can get him on, I think it'd be a very interesting conversation. He's been in the industry and around it for a very long time, so I think it'd be very cool to talk to him. I've also been playing in a online game. The second session of it will actually be tomorrow night, which might be the night that you're listening to this, which is the 20th. It's a heavily modified OSE game run by Todd Labak, best known for his Hex products, which are published under Third Kingdom Games. I'll have a link to all that down in the show notes. The game also features Evil Jeff from Minions and Musings. it's a game where Todd really wants to focus on domain level play. So we all got to start off a little bit higher level than you normally do. I have a level 6 assassin named Orpheus and a level 4 Godborn, which is a custom class Todd's created, called Valistra. On our first session, we planned out a pretty decisive and well-executed plan to take over a ruined keep from a bunch of troglodytes. I got to do a bunch of cool, sneaky, assassin-y type things as we were going in and casing the place and just, staying out of trouble, but putting all the plans, various stages in motion so that the troglodytes basically got wiped out with almost no impact to our party at all, really. We've got the keep now, and it went really, really well. We have a possible faction that we might be able to call on in the future because we let a few of the troglodytes live. We gave one of the survivors basically we named him the new head of their tribe, so to speak, and directed them to leave the area that we're in. So they've now gone off. They seem to be pretty grateful about that. So we may be able to use them as a faction partner later on if we need to. And we've also got this mysterious building in our keep that has a giant pit with what I'm assuming is some sort of black ooze. We were warned not to mess with it, and it seems to devour whatever gets thrown down into that pit. I'm thinking that's a fantastic garbage disposal. The rest of the party is worried that might make it grow. We will see what happens. it's been an interesting game. I'm interested to see how things go as we get more into the domain level side of it and what Todd plans on throwing our way. So outside of gaming, have you happened to have heard that Twitter is burning down and everybody is fleeing and all in a panic? I personally think that is a very silly media-driven fury that nothing is going to come of it. I think if you are honest about things, nothing has changed for the vast, vast majority of people who just use Twitter in a casual, normal manner. I have zero doubts that Twitter will still be around in several months or years, and quite possibly be the better for it. But I am very grateful that all this, fury and talk has brought a bunch of attention to Mastodon and the Fediverse at large. Because I do think that having more options in the social media space, especially ones that are more user-controlled as opposed to being a giant walled garden like the Facebooks and Twitters of the world are, is a good thing. So I set up a single-user instance, which might sound like gibbledygook to somebody who doesn't know what I'm talking about. Basically, I set up my own version of Mastodon that is only for me. Think of it like my own private Twitter, but I can communicate to people all across the rest of the Mastodon network very easily. If you want to find me and add me, there'll be a link to my my Fediverse page down in the show notes, and you can add me on there. It's an interesting social network. It's something that I think people should at least explore. It's not anything difficult or scary, and sign up for an account. There's tons of free instances that you can go and do this on. The best short description I can give is that it is simply pretending that Twitter and email had a baby. So as long as you know who what somebody else's addresses. So like mine is @theredcaps@social.theredcaps.net. As long as you know that, you can reach out to me, no problem. Once we follow, then you know, you'll be able to see all the posts I make, same as you would on Twitter. And as you know, as you follow more people, you get the networking effect of the people that they follow and the posts that they like and retweet essentially show up in your timelines, and your timeline becomes much more personalized to the people that you are actively following rather than it being a algorithm that's feeding you things. So it's pretty cool. If you'd like me to do like a full episode where I explain it maybe in a little bit more detail, let me know. But yeah, Mastodon's pretty neat. Check it out. Finally, a bunch of people have been asking me to continue doing interviews after OSR October and how much people seem to enjoy those. So I am definitely doing that because I enjoy doing them as well. So far this month, we had conversations with Del Tigler, who's done a bunch of artwork for Hyperborea, and Chris McDowell, the creator of Into the Odd. I've also got recorded and will be releasing over the next week or two a conversation with Yohai Gall of Karn and Jim Kelly, the tabletop engineer, which were both really a lot of fun to record. Those guys were great to talk to. In December, I'm hoping to have a conversation with Isaac Williams of Mouse Ritter fame, Justin Alexander of the Alexandrian blog, Steve Grodzinski, I think I'm pronouncing that right, of Low Fantasy Gaming. And I'm trying to get it scheduled yet. We haven't gotten the dates locked down, but I want to have a conversation with Emmy Cave Girl Allen and Eric of the Merry Mushman. So hopefully lots of more interviews to take you right through to the end of the year. I don't want to stop doing my shorter episodes, though. One of the downsides to the interviews is they're all, I usually have them around an hour long. So I want to do some more shorter episodes, but I kind of want to make sure I'm doing ones that you guys are all interested in. So please reach out to me via email, voicemail, or SpeakPipe and give me some ideas of things that you would like to hear me talk about. Is there a set of rules or creatures or adventures or a module that you'd like to see me talk about? Drop me a note. Let me know what that might be. Speaking of voicemails, though, let's go through a couple of them before we wrap up this episode.
Yo, Kevin, awesome episode. Yeah, I totally agree with you. The world is the world, and it moves around, you know, whether the players are there or not, which is why I buck so hard against one of the tenets I've heard from the OSR so many times, is that the only thing that matters is what happens at the table. Obviously, it's not, because not everything that happens in the world happens at the table. Like you're pointing out, sometimes that's just a GM thing that you take care of in between sessions, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I agree with you 100%. It's got to be an active world. That's a more exciting world. And, you know, the players can affect that world, but if they choose to ignore it, shit's still going to happen. Things are still going to happen. So yeah, man, awesome episode, dude. Keep it up. Talk to you soon. Peace out.
Hey, Kevin, Jason here. Listen to your Unpause Your World. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of now, not necessarily the system you described, but the idea of the faction play happening and moving in the background, that's how I've always, I mean, I've typically in the past few years run any kind of game that's an ongoing campaign. They've all been short adventures, so it hasn't been an issue. But in the past, I mean, that's definitely the way to do it. And that's what I'm familiar with, is that kind of thing happening. You know, different factions doing things in the background and then finding out about it when you get back to town or whatever. The way you described is a good way to do it. The plus about the way you're describing it, of course, is that it's pretty low maintenance on the GM, and it's pretty quick for the GM to do, which is nice, because that way when the players throw a curveball in there, you haven't spent many hours doing things and then have the players ruin it all. So that's the plus to having a light prep and a lighter system involved in this. Anyway, yeah, great episode. I'm sure not everybody does this, so I'm sure this will be very helpful to some folks. Keep up the great work. Keep the great content coming out, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. That was Joe Rector of Hindsightless and Jason of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast calling in. They were talking about the On Pause Your World episode that I did a few episodes back. Yeah, I think it's important to make sure the world is moving around, and I'm glad you guys enjoyed that. The only thing that matters is what happens at the table comment that Joe made. I think that's more involved in again, what a player's backstory is. Him and I always have that long ongoing conversation about backstories. We differ on it, but that's fine. But I think that's where that comment comes up, is that, you know, the player or the character's development is what happens at the table. Whereas the world may happen obviously off the table, because a lot of that is done of world prep long before players ever encounter the world. So, I think it's important to make sure it's running around. And I do agree with Jason that, you know, having the light system is very helpful for the GMs, and it keeps you from having to, you know, it allows you to kill your darlings easier. So if you haven't put a bunch of time into it, if it's simple and easy to reconnect of how things are going, you will be less likely to hold on to some wonderful idea and force things down players' throats a little bit. So if you could just let your darlings die off and just react to what's actually happening, I think that's better in the long run in all aspects of the game, not just faction play, but definitely helps in faction play as well. All right, I think we've got one more caller. Let's hear what that one is.
Hey, Kevin. This is Taylor from over at Clericswear Ringmail, calling in, listening to episode 105. You mentioned you had a strong opinion about what the OSR is and that you didn't want to tell people that they were having fun wrong. Well, I think you and I agree pretty much on what the OSR is, and I think we are right. And fortunately, I do not care at all about telling people they're doing something wrong. So, if ever you need the opportunity, I wanted to give you this here soundbite. Stranger, you're having fun wrong, damn it! Thanks, Kevin. Looking forward to next October.
The voice you heard there was that of Taylor of the Clerics Wear Ringmail. I would like to point out that the opinions expressed by my callers are not just kidding. Taylor and I do have a very common understanding between the two of us of what we think the OSR is. We largely agree on it. And much like he said, he thinks I'm right. I think he's mostly right as well. But right or wrong on it, it's clearly a term that has become very nebulous. You'll hear more conversation about this actually in an upcoming episode when I speak with Yohai from the maker of Karen, or Karen. I can't pronounce words right now. Listen to that episode, because we have an interesting discussion about OSR versus NSR. And if I could find a spot where I can use that and not sound like a completely grumpy grognard, I will definitely use that sound clip, or at least just use it as saying that you infiltrated the podcast and that was your opinion on it. And I can just place all the blame over there. And any complaints you have about that, please reach out to Clericswear Ringmail. I'll have a link to him down in the show notes as well. But I do appreciate the call in, and thank you very much for providing that. And I hope I can find a place to use it that is humorous for everybody. Okay, folks, that is going to wrap up this episode of the Red Caps Podcast. I hope you enjoyed, you learned something, and that you were eager to come back for more. www.theredcaps.net has all the links to all the ways to contact me, and I would love to hear from you. Please do check out the show notes. It'll have links to all kinds of interesting, cool things. And thank you very so much for listening. Remember, never let your caps dry out. Stay safe, have fun. We'll talk again soon. Take care.